Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs. Along with me is TJ Inman, and we'll be breaking down Indiana's 56-14 win over Idaho on Saturday and previewing a big matchup for the Hoosiers against the number 8 Cincinnati Bearcats, who come in at 2-0 as part of a really tough schedule, opening, you know, half schedule for the Hoosiers, TJ. So before we get into that, we do have a word from our friends over at Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is a free audio-only based social media platform for sports fans. You can start or join ongoing conversations, watch games together, react to the biggest news, rumors, and games, talk with other sports fans, insiders, and executives. All you have to do is download the Spotify Green Room app free in the iOS App Store, create a profile, link your Twitter, and join your league or group. TJ, how are we doing after Indiana's big win over Idaho?
It was a lot more fun to watch that game than it was the Iowa game, no doubt about that. You know, a couple of results stood out to you on Saturday. One was Iowa going to Iowa City and largely controlling the game against the Cyclones, much like they did against Indiana. The outcome was not, you know, as wide as it was against IU, but I think the moral of that was that Iowa is really good. Now, that, again, in no way excuses the performance that we saw from Indiana in Iowa City, but it was a little bit comforting to see Iowa, you know, go there and play really well and get that win. Second, you have Indiana go out, jump out to a 21-0 lead, and really play
35-0 lead.
Right. But right away, it was, you know, 21-0 is kind of the reverse of what Iowa did to the Hoosiers. Not in the same way, and we'll get into the offense and what we saw and what we didn't against Idaho and what it means moving forward. But it was a very, on offense and defense, it was very methodical performance from Indiana. Nothing really to complain about necessarily, but nothing that got you all that revved up either. Just a methodical performance to get a win that they definitely had to have, and convincingly so. You know, it's important to remember they did win by 42 points. The thing that stood out the most was the outstanding special teams play, which I do think has to be, you know, rewarded. We're critical of the special teams unit when they play poorly. We have to give them a lot of credit for an outstanding performance that they had against Idaho, one that we have not seen for decades.
Yeah, the special teams performance against Idaho was spectacular and outstanding. It's something that, you know, we've talked about that IU needs. Now, that you can't expect that performance every right. time. You know, IU scored 2 special teams touchdowns for the first time since 1969. They blocked 2 punts. I think they had 266 return yards, and now blocks, and when you pick up the block and return it yards, that counts as punt return yards as well. So it was really, really good to see and encouraging to see. If you had to nitpick, you know, James Evans, he was more consistent, I thought, against Idaho, but he didn't show that booming leg that he did in the second half against Iowa. But the rest of the special teams unit was spectacular, and you got Chris Freeman in on a couple extra points, which helps you build depth at that position as well. DJ Matthews. I mean, Reese Taylor had a nice night on punt returns. He averaged like 8 yards return. But DJ Matthews is a game changer at that position. You know, Reese Taylor is no slouch at punt returner. He was all Big Ten honorable mention or third team last year. But holy cow, that return by DJ Matthews, you know, if they could do that against Cincinnati, they'll be in business. Jarrett Smolar looked good, you know, and, you know, the Charles Campbell's automatic, things like that. You also had Jacoby Hewitt on, I think he had two big kick returns. One got called back because Ty Wise was blocking without, he continued playing without his helmet on, which is a penalty that you could kind of live with. You know, hey, you should stop it. You should know better. But that's an effort thing. That's, you know, you want your guy to continue to play even without his helmet on. And then Brian Fitzgerald had a nice return on a squib kick as well. So hopefully that means that special teams has turned a corner, turned it around. And while you can't expect all those big plays in one game like you did against Idaho, you know, if you could get a block in a game and then a long return in another game, it'll go a long way to helping this offense. TJ, let's talk about the Indiana offense real quickly.
One quick thing on the punt returns. Tom Allen said today that DJ Matthews and Reese Taylor will both continue to return punts. I'm kind of curious why they would do that. With the Jalen Williams has already been hurt once this season. He's expected to play this coming Saturday, which is great news. But Chris Keys, who filled in admirably and looked the part of a future really good corner, he has torn his ACL. He is out for the year, and Noah Pierre is moving to corner. You know, given that, in some clear, not depth concerns necessarily, but another injury, and you could see depth concerns there. Reese Taylor is not a guy that you can afford to lose, in my opinion, from that defensive backfield. I think there's more depth at wide receiver, and I think that DJ Matthews has proven both at Florida State and now at IU, he's incredibly dynamic. I hope that shifts to DJ Matthews getting the bulk of the punt returns. I hope that's what we end up seeing, but just something to keep an eye on from a playing time standpoint, if you will, who's going to get those reps in meaningful action basically every game from here on out.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that Christopher Keys went down. I didn't see the play that he went. I don't remember.
No.
He played late in the game, and that explains why Tylan Mullen was probably in late too, because they mentioned that on the radio broadcast late in the game. I think it was the last drive or the second to last drive where, you know, Fish said, you know, it's shocking that Tylan, but now it makes sense. You know, you only have a limited number of bodies there to start off with, switching things to the offense, TJ, I don't know. I think there's a lot of issues that I have with the offense. And I think it starts with the offensive coordinator. You know, Michael Penix played better, and, you know, it's not his fault that they got the ball, I think, on the 13-yard line. And then, you know, it's not his fault that the drives he had were 20 yards, you know, outside of that first one and maybe the second one and things like that. But, man, they're so conservative on with the offensive play calling that, you know, he didn't hit on any throws deep. I think he was 13 to 20 for 68 yards or something like that. It's, you know, Stephen Carr ran the ball well, but you're not getting Peyton Hendershot the ball, and we found out on Idaho how good A.J. Barner could be on a 76-yard touchdown pass from Jack Tuttle. And the question I posted in our group text was, you know, does Tuttle give you the best chance to win right now? Not saying he's better than Michael Penix or, you know, Penix has regressed, but maybe Penix is not fully ready. And this is why, you know, when you schedule opening up at Iowa and playing Cincinnati in your first two out of the three games is tough for a quarterback coming back from a late November knee injury. You'd like to have, you know, Idaho and some easier games at the front to try and ease him back in. And, you know, that's the question I'll pose to you. Does Jack Tuttle, you know, and maybe it's a Nick Sheridan thing, does Jack Tuttle give this team a better chance to beat Cincinnati this week?
Well, I'll tell you, I was shocked by the tempo of play that IU played with against Idaho. Particularly just what stuck out the most in my mind was that first drive. 18 plays. And what I think it was just about 9 minutes. It might have gone a little over 9 minutes. That's in one frame of mind, you could say, well, that's a positive. They sustained a long drive, and you know, that's a winning strategy to go 18 plays and score a touchdown. That's good. And I think you could make that argument. In the negative sense, you would say you're playing Idaho and it took you 18 plays to get in the end zone.
Yeah.
Which is a lack of explosion on that offensive side of the ball. And I do agree with you. It comes back to, for me, regardless of who the quarterback is, if they are not more aggressive on the offensive side of the ball, there's going to be a whole bunch of three and outs, and Indiana is going to struggle to crack, you know, 14 or 17 against Cincinnati. They're going to have to take shots down the field to loosen up the defense, be able to run the ball. They're going to have to aggressively, I think, and we have talked about this ad nauseum, both as a group on this podcast, they need to get the tight ends involved. That's Peyton Hendershot. That's A.J. Barner. They need to get those guys involved. And then I don't know if there is a running back passing game, because we've yet to see it. That is something that David Ellis should excel at, and it's something that Stephen Carr was good at USC. And we haven't seen that even sniffed yet. Now, you could say Indiana didn't want to put anything on tape for Cincinnati to look at. Maybe.
Where
we're going to find out.
Iowa.
Well,
that's my question. That's,
yep, and I think that is very valid. We're going to find out on Saturday if they do have, you know, anything creative in the, you know, in the bag. I think that they are going to absolutely need it, because IU is not going to be able to. It was great that Luke Haggard was back, and Zach Carpenter played a little bit as well in a limited role on Saturday. So that's closer to the offensive line you envisioned having. That being said, IU still only got 3.6 yards per rush against Idaho. And it wasn't for a lack of trying. I mean, they ran the ball a ton. And I understand that philosophy in a game like this. I understand that philosophy when you have a lead. I think that is very defensible. However, when you're attempting to get Michael Penix into a rhythm, to get him comfortable, to get him confidence, which is what the coaching staff is talking about, every press conference they have and every media availability they have, it's about getting Mike more comfortable, getting Mike into rhythm, which makes sense after being out for an extended period of time. But if you're trying to do that, I would think you'd be attempting to take shots down the field if you feel like you can block it. And that's my concern right now, is the lack of creative game plan, the lack of aggressive game plan from the offense, maybe that's in place because they don't feel comfortable that they're able to block it, which is a big concern, obviously. I mean, what you saw, and this is an extreme example, IU does not have the caliber of player on the offensive front that Oregon does, but Oregon went to Ohio State with a, you know, run first approach, but they were aggressive in the way that they were running. It was some quick tempo stuff. They were being very aggressive at the point of attack. I mean, I don't know if you've, this is somewhat unrelated, but their offensive line coach, I mean, he looks like a jockey next to those gigantic offensive linemen. It looks like what I would look like stepping on a football field against any of these guys. But it strikes me that Oregon's offensive line was able to completely physically dominate a game against Ohio State. Indiana, who is attempting to get to that level, you know, that's the goal. That's the stated goal, is to win the Big Ten. Darren Hiller's unit, despite recruiting fairly well, has shown zero ability to take over games in that way. Zero up to this point. And I think that that has to be the biggest concern, is that offensive line play combined with, and probably related to, a complete lack of creative play calling from Nick Sheridan. Now, again, we do have to point out IU won by 42 points and, you know, put up 56 points, a lot of that due to special teams play. I get that, but still, it was a successful game for Indiana. I don't want that to get lost in the weeds as we, I mean, it sounds like a bit of a, on the Big Ten Network, they were, you know, after the game, you would have thought that IU lost by, you know, 50, the way that they were talking about the program. But the question, after my rambling, the question of Tuttle or Penix, I honestly don't really care, because my larger issues are the offensive play calling, regardless of who the quarterback is, and the blocking. And if those two things are not improved for Saturday, it does not matter which one of those guys is a quarterback.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I also think, you know, Ty Freifogel needs to start getting separation from defensive backs, and Cincinnati's going to have a really good secondary, and they're going to try and shut him down, which, you know, for the most part, teams have. He does have 10 catches, but it's under 200 yards, you know, total. So it's going to be the offense can't just line up and with the way that they're playing along the offense and bully people and do stuff like that. So it's, they're going to have to get creative, and they're, you know, did we see a wide receiver screen at all yesterday? I don't remember it. If there was one,
I don't recall. They attempted to, I mean, that one of the only targets to a tight end before that deep shot to Barner, you know, was a little kind of delayed slip screen for Bjorsen, and he, you know, fell over, but that was open. It's just an example of, that's a type of play that can be successful using your personnel that you have. He had 10, 15 yards in front of him if he would have been able to stay on his feet, you know, and that's a short pass that can act as a run. It's low risk, and it gets the ball out of Michael Penix's hand with a high probability of a completion.
Yep.
You know, nobody did anything wrong that play. Bjorsen just got tangled up and fell. But that's the type of thing I would like to see more of. You've got to get guys involved with high percentage plays, and the short passing game is something that I think we need to see more of. And then the tempo doesn't really make any sense to me, why they were going at such a slow pace. I don't, and I know some of that is because that's a philosophy that protects the defense. I get that, but it was slowed down to an extent that I think it showed a real concern about what the state that your offense is actually in.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking how slow they went, because you know, you would think that would be something that Idaho would want to do, is shorten the game. You know, Idaho ended up scoring 14 points. And, you know, without the special teams and the havoc plays, who knows what the score of that game would have been. But if you take a 9-minute drive to put up 7 points and Idaho's scoring in a minute and a half, that's how upsets happen. And that's, you know, if IU's going to beat Ohio, that's how they're going to have to do it, is put together a 18-play, 80-yard drive and put 7 points on the board and, you know, shorten the game to keep it close and then go and win it at the end. It's a formula that underdogs have been using since the dawn of time in football. So that was concerning. It just... The lack of creativity. There's too many good athletes on this team to not have a good offense. And maybe it goes back on Darren Hiller as well. Look, they're not making a change in the middle of the season that I know of or that I foresee. But he's had 4 years with this unit, and it's regressed. So it's time to your window. And I talked about this after Iowa, your window is only open for a certain amount of time before it either starts closing or you have to extend it and keep it open. So if the offensive line is the downfall of this team, and you could see the improvements from Michigan State, Rutgers, you know, Purdue is 2-0. They beat UConn, but you know, they're gaining confidence. If this team struggles to get to 6 wins, you have to reevaluate what you're doing on the offensive line, because that they have held this program back the last couple of years on offense. And maybe, you know, you look at offensive coordinator as well, and you say, you know, okay, if you can't block, you know, those downfield passes, what can we do to offset that? And I don't think Sheridan has done a very good job at that either. Let's move over to the defensive side of the ball, TJ. I thought Indiana's defense outside of the last drive of the first half and the first drive of the second half was outstanding. They played with fanatical effort. They got the strip sack. And things like that. They probably need a few more havoc plays. I'd like to have seen them play a few more young guys to develop depth. But, you know, Michael McFadden played really well. Ryder Anderson is a total beast along that defensive line.
Yeah.
They did have success going at Tylan Mullen, which is kind of concerning. But also, it's he has his track record, and you trust him to improve. It was just another ho hum, really solid defensive effort from Indiana outside of two drives, which you saw Tom Allen was not happy with either. What was your takeaway from the defense on Saturday?
Yeah, credit to Hayden Hatton, the Idaho receiver that had two touchdowns. He's a good player. He had had some really nice catches. So, you know, credit where it's due to him as well. But I thought the defense was really good. Third down conversions for Idaho, just 3 of 14, and then 1 of 2 on fourth down. Indiana only allowed them to get into the red zone one time. They did score on that trip, but still just the one time that they got into the red zone. So I thought it was a very good performance by the defense. And yeah, they came out and set the tone very early with some, you know, really good pursuit to the ball, some hard hits early on. It was clear that they were playing with a really good intensity level right out of the gate. And I think that helped kind of settle things down right away, them plus the special teams. And then, you know, that long methodical drive by the offense kind of set things up early to, but you know, calm the nerves, let Idaho know you know, we were bad last week, but you're not coming in here to get any type of upset sniff. So I thought the defense was good. Not the best performance we've seen, but certainly you'd take that every time out if you can get it. They were pretty good in most phases of that contest. Trying to see 3 yards of carry for Idaho. They ran it 22 times for a net of 65 yards. That's really good. That's really good defense. So you like the run defense. You like what Ryder Anderson continues to bring. And then, you know what you're getting with that secondary. And then I think Weston Kramer continues to show that he's an impactful transfer as well. So really like what I saw from that unit as a whole. And I'm excited to see what they do with Desmond Ridder, who is possibly the best quarterback IU's going to see this year. I think you could make an argument for a couple of guys, but Ritter's probably the one that I'd single out.
Yeah, they're really, really, good. We'll see what Cincinnati – this is Cincinnati's first test of the season as well. They beat Miami of Ohio in the first – game of the season, 49-14. They beat Murray State last week. I think it was 7-7 at halftime, but they ended up winning 42-7. So it's kind of a slow start. Desmond Ridder is there. He's a really good quarterback. He's completed 34 of 47 passes. That's 72.3% for 538 yards, 6 touchdowns, 1 interception. He has been sacked 4 times. They have a good running back, two good running backs. But Jerome Ford is their main running back. He's averaging over 7.5 yards per carry, 30 attempts, with 4 touchdowns. They got a, 4 wide receivers who are, over 17 yards per catch. They're led by Tyler Scott, who has 5 for 155. And 2 touchdowns. They played a lot of people coming in. Now it's a non-conference game, so Cincinnati could bring whoever they want to in. Their defense has 3 sacks on the year. They have 3 interceptions and a forced fumble. So I thought their defensive numbers would be better, but Cincinnati's a real, real solid team. They're coming in off a road or off a Peach Bowl performance. Charlton Warren should be familiar with this team. He did play against them. Well, he coached against them in the Peach Bowl. He's familiar with Desmond Ridder and things like that. What's your takeaway from Cincinnati, TJ?
But yeah, Ford is a very good running back. He had over 6 yards to carry last year as well. I think he's a little different than Goodson, more of a physical runner than Goodson is. He's not going to be a threat out of the backfield to catch the ball. I think their best pass catcher is probably Josh Wiley, tight end, and they've got another tight end, Leonard Taylor. It's also very good. This is a very veteran team. Across their starting lineup, you're going to see, really without exception, junior, senior, or super senior are going to be their starters. They are, some of their depth is young guys, but for the most part, this is a very veteran team that has been through the fires, has that experience going against Georgia last year. If you go back and look at their defense, going back to the beginning of 2020, they've only had one team exceed, I believe it's one team exceed 24 points. And that was Central Florida scoring 36 or 33. Central Florida scored 33. Cincinnati beat them 36-33 in Orlando. That's what got them to the AAC title game against Tulsa. Georgia scored 24 on them in a pretty fun Peach Bowl, but it's a very good defense, not quite the streak or not quite the strength that Iowa has on that side of the ball, but right there with them. They're going to be a bit more aggressive on the defensive side of the ball than Iowa. They did lose their defensive coordinator to Notre Dame, so but it's Luke Fickell's defense. It's going to be the same philosophy. Yeah, they have not been tested yet this year, so I think that that is probably an advantage for Indiana, just that they have gone up against a major opponent. They've been hit in the mouth already. There's not going to be any surprise about the speed of this game for the Hoosiers, whereas Cincinnati, you know, they will have not had a truly competitive game since January 1st against the Bulldogs. So I think that's the really interesting part. And then Desmond Ritter, IU's defense has to figure out a way to contain his rush, keep him in the pocket, and pressure him without losing that contain. Because, you know, there's nothing more frustrating for a defense than forcing a third and medium or a third and long, getting pressure on the quarterback, and then you lose contain and he sneaks to the outside, gets the first down and runs out of bounds or slides down with the first down. That will demoralize you as a defense. So that's going to be a big key for the Hoosiers. And on the other side of the ball, IU's offense, we've already talked about it, keeping whoever the quarterback is, it's going to be Michael Penix starting the game, whoever's back there, giving them a clean pocket to work from, and then as an offense, having the confidence to be aggressive on that side of the ball. You cannot play scared and hope that you can beat Cincinnati 17-14. I trust IU's defense for sure, but if you're asking them to keep Cincinnati, you know, at 14 points in order for you to win that game, that's a recipe to lose, in my opinion. Yeah. You have to go out there aggressively on offense thinking we've got to go score points. We cannot wait and see if we need to score or if we can just be safe on offense. We've got to see aggressiveness from the offense. We have to see creativity and a desire to go get points down the field.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the crowd, we didn't talk about this with Idaho, but that crowd Saturday night, TJ, was amazing. I think it came across TV well. It was 47,000 people, which is, you know, outside of the Ohio State opener in 2017, that hasn't happened. It was, especially for an FCS opponent, the students packed the house. The new band director as well did a fantastic job. They did a formation with the sample gates. They did a couple other formations with the outline of the state of Indiana. They, you know, played new songs. They got rid of the flags between the third and fourth quarter. I think they played the fight song again after touchdowns instead of the first down song. It was just a much better game day experience from that perspective. The game on Saturday is sold out. And the hope is that it's more IU fans in Cincinnati, which it should be. It is a noon game, so, you know, as long as the crowd gets there on time, for kickoff, it's going to be a loud crowd. You saw it energize that defense in the first half, energize the offense in the first half and special teams as well. The Memorial Stadium was rocking on Saturday night, and I've never seen the wave go around Memorial Stadium with mainly IU fans three times around the stadium. So it was kudos to the fans who came out, tailgated, made it into the game. Of course, people left early. It was a late game, which makes sense. And it was a blowout. So to beat traffic, leaving early was fine. But Saturday's a game against Cincinnati. People should be in their seats from start to finish as well. So let's get into our predictions and picks for the Big Ten games this week. It's presented by PointsBet. They provide the spreads for all the games that we look at. I don't think there are that many great Big Ten games this week, but you know, that there are a couple in there in the Big Ten. You have another early season conference matchup on Friday night, a late 9 p.m. start with Maryland going to Illinois. Illinois has dropped the last two games since they knocked off Nebraska in week zero. Maryland is a 7.5-point favorite. TJ, do you like Maryland going to Illinois and covering that 7.5 points?
Illinois has shown absolutely nothing positive since knocking off Nebraska. So I think you have to take the Terps right here. It's been a really good start for them, beating West Virginia and then handling Howard, which doesn't really mean anything. But you know that West Virginia win is better than the win over Nebraska. And then I don't think that Illinois has shown anything that would make you confident in taking them. So I'll take Maryland.
Yeah, I think I take Maryland as well. I don't know if they cover the 7.5, though. So I'll take Illinois with the 7.5 points. Next, we go down on Saturday at noon, Michigan State at Miami of Florida. The Hurricanes are 6.5-point favorites. I tend to lean towards Miami as well. They barely escaped Appalachian State with the win. They got hammered in the opener against Alabama. Does Miami cover here? Is it going down in the heat? Now, I know it's been hot in the Midwest, but that Florida heat is a little different in September. Yeah. Do you see the Hurricanes covering?
So I'm not touching that game because I don't know. One, we don't know what Michigan State is. I mean, they looked great against Northwestern, but I thought Northwestern looked incredibly slow in that game. And then Miami, again, not sure what they have either, so I'd probably stay away from it. But when pressed to make a pick, I would go with the home team. You're getting less than a touchdown if you're Michigan State. So as long as it stays under 7, I'd probably stick with the Hurricanes at home.
Me too. Next, we go out to Oklahoma for Nebraska and Oklahoma. And if you told somebody from 50 years ago that the spread on this game would be 22 points, they would have called you crazy. Oklahoma is a 22-point favorite at home. That is a huge spread for two, supposed blue blood programs with a lot of history and things like that. Does Nebraska have a chance to cover the 22 points?
I mean, they have a chance, but there's no way on earth I'm betting Nebraska to cover against Oklahoma right now. No way. I would take Oklahoma Sooners, and I would take the over. I know people are probably a bit scared off by what Tulane did, and that's understandable, but I think Tulane's pretty darn good. They played a very physical game and I think really surprised Oklahoma. I think the Sooners will be up to make a bit of a statement in this one and really put a whooping on the Cornhuskers. I would take Oklahoma -22.5, and I would take over. I'm seeing 61.5 because I think Oklahoma puts 50 plus on the board.
Again, the spreads and lines and over-unders are brought to you by PointsBet. There are two more Big Ten Power 5 games. If you count Notre Dame as Power 5, we do. Minnesota goes out to Colorado. They're underdog by 2 points. The over there is 50. Does Minnesota go into Colorado and spring a mini upset?
Yeah, I mean, the Buffaloes really impressive on defense against Texas A&M. Nearly pulled off that big upset. That game was in Denver, played at the Broncos Stadium. This one is in Boulder. And
no Ibrahim.
Yeah, Minnesota really struggled with Miami of Ohio. I would lean towards Colorado. Texas A&M's defense is really good, so that could explain the low score there. They'll have more success scoring against the Gophers. I do think Colorado's defense is a good one. They're a very physical team. They don't fit that typical old Pac-12 mentality of just chucking it around. They're different than that. I would take Colorado minus two. And then our last game, probably, you know, Purdue and Notre Dame.
Yep.
Very interesting one for sure. Notre Dame favored by a touchdown. They're favored by seven. Xander Horvath is out for this one. That's a big loss for Purdue. He provides a different element than anyone else on that roster can. Notre Dame 2-0, but two very unconvincing performances. Their offense has looked better than their defense has. Purdue hasn't proved it to me yet, and Notre Dame as a program definitely has. So I'm going to give Brian Kelly the benefit of the doubt to get some things figured out on the defensive side of the ball. Notre Dame covers this one, and I think it would not surprise me to see Notre Dame kind of pull away and win this one by 17 or so.
And then finally, we have Indiana's a 3.5-point underdog against Cincinnati. Let's get into that. What is your prediction for IU Cincinnati?
Oh boy, I have thought about this one for you know 2 weeks, really since the Iowa game. I sincerely want to take Indiana, and I'm going to, but it is out of blind optimism that the offense is going to show us something that they haven't showed us yet. And that's probably foolish on my part to expect it. But I do. There's enough talent and enough experience on this offense that I do think that there are some things that they have not shown that we are going to see on Saturday, both from an execution standpoint and from an aggressiveness standpoint down the field. I think a couple of things are going to click. I think IU forces a couple of takeaways against Cincinnati. I think they make a nice special teams play, probably not a punt return for a touchdown or a punt block, but maybe a good return or two that helps them. And then Charles Campbell, I do think it's a weapon that IU could use in a game like this. It's going to be a big environment, a big atmosphere that I think the players are going to feed off of. I will take Indiana to win this game 24-20.
Wow. I'm going to go. I got burned by picking IU over Iowa, and I've learned my lesson. I'm going to take Cincinnati. I don't think IU's offense has shown that they could score. You know, and it's so hard in this day and age of college football to just rely on your defense to hold the team to 17 or 21 points, you know, when all the rules favor the offense. Desmond Ridder is a fantastic quarterback. I do think it's a close game. I would take Cincinnati 28-21 over the Hoosiers. They start the season 1-2, and you have a must-win game against Western Kentucky coming up in the next week. But hopefully I'm wrong.
No, I mean, I think your analysis is right. You know, you said Indiana's offense hasn't shown the ability to score against a defense like Cincinnati's. You're right. They absolutely have not shown that. So my pick is
blind faith, baby.
That they get something figured out between now or really between, you know, I will say between the Iowa game and the Cincinnati game, because I think that the game plan for Idaho, I think there was a purposefulness to why they played offense the way that they did. And I'm just banking on there being some tricks in the bag that IU pulls out, and some weapons that we see deployed that we haven't seen deployed yet. But
I would love to see Donovan McCulley play. I'd love to see them use Jack Tuttle a lot more in the passing game. And David Ellis is back and things like that, but they haven't shown that they could do that. and why Donovan McCulley is sitting on the bench when he got rave reviews in fall camp is beyond me, because you're not going to redshirt him. He's not staying in Bloomington for 5 years. So it's either malpractice or something's going on with, you know, maybe he's banged up or just not ready, but there's no way he's sticking around for 5 years. So why, if he's ready and not hurt, are you letting him sit on the bench? So
I
will see.
Surprised he didn't get some of the fourth quarter snaps. I understand wanting to get Tuttle snaps as well. I'm sure he's earned it with his hard work, but I am a bit surprised that we did not see at least a little glimpse of Donovan McCulley. But again, maybe that's holding that back for Cincinnati, but that is a hope on my part. And the one thing I am sure of is that noon on Saturday is going to be a really cool atmosphere in Bloomington. I don't know how the game is going to turn out, but I'm excited for the experience that I think, you know, a big game in Bloomington is going to have. I think that that's going to be a lot of fun and hopefully a great day for IU football, because you get all those people in the game and they have a great time and you have a positive result. Guess what those people are going to do?
Come back. They're going to complain that it's too humid outside.
Well, you're going to have your complainers, no doubt about that. The lines are too long. Tickets are too expensive. Construction's bad. It's hard to park. You know, the bleachers hurt my butt.
I saw that one today.
Insert your complaint here. That's going to happen. Yeah. And with a loss, those excuses magically hold more weight, don't they? With a good performance and a win over a top 10 team that gets that positive feeling back around the program and really makes up for that Iowa game, those excuses don't really hold much weight beyond one or two people that are just going to be miserable human beings regardless. So I'm looking forward to the experience that that is a big game in Bloomington, and hopefully the much better result than the last big game that we saw, which was against Iowa. So I'm excited for it. It is a nervous excitedness, though, because there is a version of this that I think goes rather poorly. But I also think that there's a version that, you know, we could see something really special happen on Saturday. So all cards are on the table. It's time for the Hoosiers to show us who they are.
Yeah, it's certainly true. It's, you know, redemption time for the game at Iowa, for the bowl game, and things like that. So Indiana's going to have to come up and get it done. TJ, that does it for today's podcast. Thanks for joining us, as always. The game, it kicks off at noon. It's on ESPN on Saturday. Tune in, head down to Bloomington. My suggestion, if you're going to Bloomington for the game, leave early, get there early. I took 67 down to 39 to 69 last week, and it worked pretty well. So just enjoy another top 10 opponent for Indiana football, and enjoy the big game atmosphere in a sold out Memorial Stadium for a game that's not against Ohio State. So thanks for joining me, TJ.
Thanks everybody for listening.
All right, that does it for today's podcast. For the Cincinnati game, come back to HoosierHuddle.com. Read all our pregame analysis. We have bowl projections that came out today, power rankings, know your opponent as well, that's going to come out tomorrow, and some other things. So have a great night. We'll be back next Monday to break down the Indiana game against Cincinnati.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.